Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Monday morning. And as we do every Monday morning at 8 o'clock, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Corey Curtis from News 2, brought to you by Tennessee Men's Clinic. Corey, good morning. How are you?
I am adequate, sir. How are you?
Adequate. That's not outstanding. That's not delightful. But it is adequate.
Well, you know, I'm truthful as well.
That's good. It's good. Corey, we were having a Titans discussion, as you know, 2 weeks away from camp. So we're getting there in terms of the summer calendar here. Denard Wilson heading into year two. Obviously, there was a ton of excitement when they made that hire. You look at his background, his path to get here. It's very impressive. You know, you look at the roster last year, and it's not great on the defensive side of the ball. The yardage they gave up actually wasn't that bad at the end of last year. But if you watch the Titans play, you know that defensively they need some help heading into this year. So I got two questions for you on the Denard Wilson front. Number one,
yep.
How are you feeling about Denard Wilson as DC heading into year two? And secondarily to that, how do you feel about the tools that Denard Wilson has at his disposal in year two as defensive coordinator?
Well, I think, you know, year one's got to be a learning experience for anyone who's in a job for the very first time. And, you know, like you said, there are certain things they did well. But both from his perspective and from a player perspective, they got to make more plays. I mean, they just didn't make enough plays that impacted the game. I'm talking about sacks and turnovers and all those types of things. And, you know, so, you know, fairly you'll say, well, who did they have to make those plays? You know, when you're two of your best defenders are 300 pounds, you're not going to generally get a lot of dynamic, you know, plays unless you've got Aaron Donald and he's retired. And also, you know, the two corners you paid through the nose for, you know, didn't show up. You know, they were hurt or one thing or another. I think he had a number of things go against him, but I think, you know, he's also got to find a way to make more plays. I know I'm sure they're emphasizing the culture of getting the ball out and, you know, the peanut punch and just constantly trying to get the ball out because they got to get the ball out and they've got to get to the quarterback. And, you know, we always talk about Jeffrey Simmons, you know, he's got to finish more plays. You know, I know he's lost weight, and that's probably what his hope is that he's that half step quicker, even to finish the sack. Because you know he's been about a 4.5, 5.5 sack guy for them. Whether that be because of injury or not, they need him to be a 9-12 sack guy. I mean, that's what they're paying for, and so that's what they need him to be. They need Tavondre Sweat to step up. You know, and I don't know what they're going to get from the edge. I mean, I'd be surprised if any of those guys winds up with more than 6 or 7. So, you know, they need somebody to have a career year out there. That's for sure.
9-12. I mean, he is a defensive tackle. That seems a little.
Well, what does Chris Jones do?
Well, sure, but has Jeff Simmons ever been? But I guess, but you, as you know, Corey, there are different kinds of great players inside, right? I guess I've never thought of him quite as a guy to that number.
There was one of his early seasons, he was on a 5-sack and 6-game pace to start the year before he got hurt. And, you know, he's been that kind of guy. And, like, I understand he gets double-teamed a lot. But there are 17 games now. And for him to come up with a sack every other game, I don't think – for the amount of money he's making and for the player that he's drafted to be. And, you know, everybody said he was a top 10 pick before the injury. I don't think asking 9 sacks from him is a huge ask. He's got the ability. He's got the talent. And like I said, that's what he's getting paid to do. He's not getting paid $20+ million a year to stop the run. Okay. Well, you could find guys to do that.
Yeah, no, he absolutely has to have a big hand in pass rush being better, but at least by affecting and pushing the pocket, right? I mean, without question. Let me ask you this.
take money out of it, because we, you know, one of them makes a lot more than the other. So, but if you just take money out of it, if you're the Titans and you could choose one of those two guys, Simmons or Sweat, to make a huge jump this year, who would it be? From last year, obviously.
Well, I mean, you're going from year to one to year two, you'd hope it would be Sweat. I mean, because at this point, you kind of know what Jeffrey Simmons is. I mean, how many? I mean, what are we? It was 2016 draft or 2019 draft?
19.
Yeah. So we're 6 years in. So we know what Jeffrey Simmons is.
Like I said, but 2021 Jeffrey Simmons, as unrealistic as that may be, is still a lot different than 2024 Jeffrey Simmons, right?
Oh, absolutely. But that's we're 3 years removed now. So, you know, and also, you know, fairly to Jeff, he had better personnel around him back then. You know, we'll see if these guys can, and maybe Tavondre can help him more out. But, you know, if you're saying who's going to make a bigger jump, you know, Tavondre Sweat had one sack last year. So I would, if he gets two, he doubled his total.
Corey, on the Titans front, obviously, I mean, we're going to spend so much time over the next few months and frankly, few years talking about Cam Ward. We know, setting that aside, that it is the number one storyline heading into camp. But
yeah,
beyond Ward, what intrigues you the most? What are you most interested to see / learn about this team heading into camp?
Well, I mean, there's a lot. But I think, you know, the number one thing, because, you know, you guys have been here a long time, I've been here a long time, most years, no matter what the Titans were, they had a pretty good offensive line. You know, it's always been the skill positions that seem to have been lacking most of the time. They've done a lot to fix the offensive line. Is this the year, you know, that they in fact get it fixed? Because if they can get it fixed, they're going to be a lot more competitive football team. I don't know how many wins that comes out to be, but if you can actually protect the quarterback, if you can actually run the football when you need a yard and get it, and if you can not commit, you know, self-inflicted wounds with penalties up front, you know, you can be a lot better football team. So that is one for sure for me. And then the other is, you know, the young receivers, you know, are any of these guys going to step up and be a guy for the team? Because I've been here for almost 25 years and this team's been looking for receivers, you know, virtually as long as I can remember. And the one they found, they traded away.
Yep.
On that offensive line, Corey, we were talking earlier about, yeah, as we get into close to preseason games here, you know, less and less are most teams playing many guys. But I would make the case that giving that offensive line actual real football reps, maybe more than some, might actually have value this year. What do you think about that? And do you think Brian Callahan may look at it that way too?
Yes and no. You're going to have trouble, though, I mean, because your right guard is aged. And so I'm sure he'll play some, but not a lot. And then your center's coming off of an Achilles injury. So how much will he be ready for the preseason? I mean, they're going to need to play together some, but I just don't know how much all five get on the field because of age and recovery. You know, but your other three, you know, can certainly be out there and can certainly work. You know, especially that left side, you know, with the new left tackle. You know, I hate to say, I don't worry much about the big guy on the right side. I think he'll be fine. But they do need time together. They do need full speed time together. I just don't know that they're going to be able to get quite as much if those guys were a few years younger and healthier that they would get.
So, Corey, on the Femi Oladejo front, you're talking about a second-round pick who, as we know and we've documented with you, just started playing edge rusher his last year in college. So I think because of that, there is a pretty widespread expectation that it's going to take him a while at the NFL level and that it's going to be more of a project. So, number one, do you buy into that? Is that fair for a second-round pick where basically there's not a whole lot of expectation at all that he's going to help you all that much this year based on his college path to get to this point at that position?
Well, isn't that the same switch that Micah Parsons made?
Yeah.
Let's just make the same expectation. He's the next Micah Parsons.
There we go.
No.
You heard it here first.
Okay.
I mean, look, he's an impressive guy to talk to. He's an impressive looking athlete, but you know, he doesn't have a whole lot of snaps out there, but they need him to play. I mean, they just don't have enough out there. They need him to play. And, you know, we'll see if he's got bend. We'll see if he can push the pocket. You know, that, I mean, he's going to have to get better as the year gets on. But I don't think it's fair to have huge expectations. I want to say it's fair. I don't think you're being fair to yourself, okay, as a fan. If you're like, oh, well, you know, if things work out for Femi, you know, he could have 8 to 12 sacks for us. Look, if he has more than 5 sacks this year, that would just be unbelievable. If he had 3 to 5 this year, I would call it a success.
So I think – wait, I just lost my question. You guys are messing me up with all this, ripping the Beatles. They're ripping the Beatles on the chat, Corey, like during this segment, and it's really like it's starting to piss me off. Please tell me that you
Why
understand – I don't know. Like the someone is actually saying, how could you like the Beatles but not System of a Down?
Let the record show I didn't say that.
No, Robbie's saying Blink-182 is better than the Beatles. I mean, can you help me out here? I'm sorry, but we got to go off topic. Can you help me out here, please? This is just derailing my morning.
Isn't the guy from Blink-182 who started up the UFO project?
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you what they do off the field, Corey. I just know about their music.
The UFO project.
That's all I know about Blink-182 is like the lead singer or the bass player started up like to the Stars project, which investigates UFOs all over the world.
Interesting. But what about the Beatles?
Richard may like them more.
I need your help.
Well, what about the Beatles? I mean, like one of the 5 top rock bands of all time, right?
I think you're doing them a disservice saying they're one of the top 5.
Yeah, probably top 2, top 3. I mean. Look,
Creed, one,
yeah,
Blink 182,
yeah. Well, I mean, it's going to depend. Okay. Some people are going to say it's the Rolling Stones, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's a fair debate to have. No, I like the Stones better than the Beatles. Okay, that's a fair debate to have.
Yes, I mean, but also when they came in, it's also when you came in. I mean, the Beatles changed the world.
Yes.
All right.
And music,
they changed the world. Blink 182. Now, if they do discover alien life, change the world. But their music has not changed the world.
Thank you, Corey.
And so you have
That's
to.
That's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah, my opinion does change the world. Okay, I could make some big ones here, but I'll hold back.
Okay, thank you, Corey. Great stuff. We're right around the corner from training camp. We appreciate, even though you're just feeling adequate today, that you took time to join us.
I am. By the way, you guys are talking Nashville SC at 8:30, right?
We are.
I tell you what, I know not everybody's a soccer person, but this team's an absolute wagon right now, and they're fun to watch. They're more talented. They're faster. You know, BJ Callahan's a heck of a coach, and their win Saturday night was as good of a win as you will ever see on the pitch. And people need to take the time to appreciate it a little bit. You will have a wonderful time at the game. And I'm not just saying this to advocate for them. I'm just saying you're missing a possible championship team if you don't go watch.
There we go. You heard it from Corey Curtis. We will be getting into Nashville SC coming up at 8:30. Corey, great stuff, brother. Appreciate you being with us.
Later.
Later. Corey Curtis from News 2, our guest, joins us every Monday morning at 8 o'clock here on the program. Brought to you by Tennessee Men's Clinic. We'll react to what Corey had to say coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Speaking of bands, I got some tickets to give away to Coheed and Cambria at Ascend Amphitheater Wednesday, September the 3rd. Be caller 5, 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. I mean, Rex Road was just left flummoxed in our last segment there. Just totally forgot his question.
I had a good football question for Corey, and I've still forgotten it because I just have, you know, these people with the Beatles shade. I mean, I just basically let you say what you're going to say about the Beatles. That's fine. But people who actually believe that, I mean, like, we need drug testing. We need more drug testing in society.
I believe it. I do.
Yeah, you don't know anything about the Beatles. You've listened to like 8 songs.
That's all I needed.
Well, you
not very good.
But that's not. Abbey Road is the greatest rock album ever.
Long
made.
Fuse.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, people are ripping on My Morning Jacket in there too. Yeah, get after me. Get after them.
Really,
ridiculous.
Everybody's musical taste is under attack on the YouTube chat right now.
But I mean, no, seriously, like the actual, I think this quote is serious. You don't like System of a Down, but you like the Beatles. Someone actually said that and I think was serious. Wow.
Oh, boy.
How do you not love System of a Down?
Hey, apparently whoever that person is got in Chicago for System of a Down for $100.
Yeah, we're talking about
the
like,
rate the concerts are going right now, $100, pretty good.
Yeah. And told us, but they did it with the acronym SOAD.
Yeah, no clue who they're
talking
about.
I saw SOAD for $100. Yeah. Who the hell is
Sold?
Duh, System of a Down.
You ever seen them live?
Good God. No.
Guess not.
No.
You got a Beastie Boys shirt on today. Are they better than the Beatles?
No, but I do love the Beastie Boys. And I'm very sad that I never saw the Beastie Boys live. I blew it, man.
A lot of reaction to the Femi Oladejo part of this. You know, it is interesting because the moment they made that pick, I think a lot of people said, okay, well, he just started playing edge rusher. And physically, you look at him and you look at his size and you think, okay, well, that guy, you know, from a physical specimen standpoint, got a chance to end up being a pretty good player in the NFL. Question is, how quickly can he get there? You know, from the Titans' timeline, is it crucial that Femi Oladejo comes in this year and is an absolute stud at edge rusher? Well, obviously it would help this year's team, but from where they're at as a franchise, if it takes 3 years for Femi Oladejo to be a great player, then you'll probably take that if you're the Titans, just as long as he ends up becoming a great player. But he is a second-round pick. Like, a second-round pick, when you take somebody in the second round, you need them to come in and help you immediately. Like, it's just the name of the game in the NFL. So, look, he's going to have to play. Corey is right. Look at their roster right now. Oladejo is going to have to play. Now, I don't know that he's necessarily going to have to start, but he's going to have to play pretty significantly for that defense. I am really interested to see what he does. You know, Corey said there, 3 to 5 sacks this year, he would consider that a success.
But he wants 12 out of Jeff.
I did hear that. If he wants anything, if Oladejo gets anything more than that, then he would say that that's, you know, unbelievable at that point. Do you agree with that? Is that what your expectation is for Oladejo? What's fair, what's unfair when it comes to him, given everything we know about his background and heading into a team that right now around him doesn't have a whole lot of pieces on that defense?
That sounds about right. See, like, first of all, the sack numbers, obviously, you can have a good sack total and it can kind of be empty calories, especially inside. It's very easy for a defensive tackle, for an interior defensive lineman, to me, to have a 2-sack year that is way better than someone else's 8-sack year. It doesn't tell you that much. But on the edge, I mean, that number matters more. And you know, because obviously your primary job is getting to the quarterback. And I would say that probably that's about right. Like, you know, 5 would be a good start just if you're just going to go with that second. But again, I mean, is he able to play in all situations? How often is he out there? How often is he affecting quarterbacks? You know, pressure rate, pass rush, win rate, stuff like that. Those things tell you more. So just the sack number of 5, yeah, I mean, I think that if he could get that, and it's in tandem with some level of, you know, consistent getting to into the backfield and consistent making a difference, and again, being part of an improved run defense, then that's great.
Yeah, I would agree. Like, the problem with this year's team is they really need him to come in and be really good from the jump. Because if he's not, unless we see something that we just haven't seen from Draymond Jones or from, I mean, go up and down their list of edge rushers out there. Unless we see something that we have just not seen from any of these guys before, it's hard to imagine them being good enough getting after the passer. unless he comes in and is just really good right from the jump. But again, I'm with people who look at his background and the fact that he just started playing that position and view it more as a project pick. But then I think that gets into, all right, is that what the Titans should have done there? Like, are you taking that guy in the second round where they took him if you feel like he's more of a project pick? And some of this is going to have to do with some of the other edge rushers that went in his vicinity in the draft, right? Like,
sure.
You know, how good does Landon Jackson end up being in his first year? Because I know a lot of people were upset. A lot of Titans fans were upset when Jackson was still on the board and they didn't take him and they went Oladejo. How good's he in his first year? How good are some of the other edge rushers that went right in that same vicinity compared to Oladejo in terms of how long it takes him to get going? That's going to be something we monitor as well.
Yeah. And look, it's, I do feel like, I mean, look, if a guy plays his whole rookie year, you know, you have a pretty good idea of what that player is. But this player is supposed to have a big learning curve. This player is supposed to, it's supposed to take a little while, you know? So that's kind of, I guess, the hard part about someone like him, a project. I mean, I guess there's no better way to get better than to play games, but still, like a project like him, you'd almost rather see a guy like that go somewhere where they at least have some edges. So you can just be the third or fourth guy and just be like, yeah, you know, weave him in, see what he can do. I mean, I just feel like necessity is going to dictate a lot of work for this guy. And if he is as raw as his lack of experience suggests, then, you know, that could make for some premature judgment.
Yeah, I mean, what I really want to see from Oladejo, it's not the same as Cam Ward, because Cam Ward played a lot more at his position, and it's just different with quarterback. But I would love to see by the end of the year, you look at Oladejo on the edge, and he's starting to figure it out, and you come away from the end of this season thinking to yourself that in 2026, he's got a chance to be a really, really good player for you. Like, that would be good to see. Like, you know, Brian on the YouTube chat, and I understand this, says if you're drafting a guy with a second-round pick, you need more production than 3 or 5 sacks. It's a letdown. Otherwise, you shouldn't have drafted a project edge rusher with a second-round pick. I understand that thought process. I do. I also think, like, where you're at as an organization matters in this discussion too. And if it's 2021 and the Titans are doing that, when they're in go-for-it mode, I got more of a problem with that than I do right now when they're the worst team in the NFL and they're trying to build to something. I think there's a difference between those two things.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's just this is probably not going to be a good team, and it is about – this is clearly a big swing in terms of upside, but you're going to have to be a little bit patient. I'm reading Brugler right now. I know we did this after the draft, but he says, you know, he offers pass rush upsides. He continues to evolve his attack plan. But he has the disruptive qualities, his power and effort to see immediate NFL snaps, 3-down potential. And then, of course, the coachability was a thing that will be enough to reach a sin. Will be key through – well, that was through the process. But there was some stuff about that. I mean, basically at this point through the spring, you know, it sounds like from that perspective it's been pretty good out there.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Nick Frazier will be with us coming up next. We will get into Nashville SC, who is red hot with a big win over the weekend, as you heard Corey Curtis discuss, and they are unbeaten in 14 straight. We'll get Nick Frazier's thoughts on Nashville SC coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you, joined by our man, Nick Frazier.
Hello. Boom.
Who, by the way, you will hear coming up here at 9 o'clock for a couple hours with Big Joe Dubin as well. So,
hello, hello.
A lot of Nick Frazier day here on the show. Nick Frazier, how we doing? What's going on?
We're great. You know, yesterday I fell down a flight of steps helping my buddy Trey move out of his apartment, but we're good. We're here.
Did you bounce back up, or did you just kind of take a minute?
It took me a minute. Okay. I think I've reached that age at the ripe age of 26. It's going to take me a minute.
Yeah.
Rex was looking at you just in sheer terror
tough
over there.
I'm glad you're okay. Before we get started, are the Beatles good?
Yeah, why not?
Thank you.
Hey,
everybody else shut up, including you, Big Joe.
In high school, my English teacher, Mr. Purrier, we actually took a whole semester to learn about the Beatles. It was a history class about the Beatles.
Really?
This might be the freaking teacher of the year in this country. Holy crap.
I'll get you his
number. What story for everybody?
Mr. Purrier. Matt Purrier.
Shout out to Mr. Purrier. Yeah. That is absolutely worthwhile for the kids.
No
good
relation to Spurrier.
No Spurrier. Yeah.
So Nashville SC gets another win against Philadelphia over the weekend. 1-0 the final score. Hani Mukhtar the game winner. And that is 14 in a row where they are unbeaten. And they're number two in the conference now. They're 1 point behind Cincinnati. So what do you make of the run that they're on? And as you watch them play, as you watch the way that they're coming together, how do you view kind of their chances to make a real run here moving forward?
I think it's a true case where they can not only just go for the MLS Cup, they can also win the U.S. Open Cup. And maybe even the Supporters' Shield. Supporters' Shield's like the President's Trophy in hockey, best record. They could have the huge opportunity, and they should possibly capitalize on it, on getting a domestic treble. Treble winning three trophies. Some people look at the Supporters' Shield as not a real trophy. I'll count it just for the sake of Nashville having the just hunger to win a championship, a major championship. So, yeah, Nashville has a true case of winning three trophies this season. As for the evolution of the way they've played from last season to this season, B.J. Callahan has a interesting formation where he has four defenders, two midfielders, two attacking midfielders, and then an offset striker set where Sam Surge is up top as the nine, and Hany Mukhtar kind of drifts behind him as the 10, playing that creator role. I think the way B.J. Callahan is instilled in this team, everyone attacks, everyone defends. That's what you really need if you want to be a top four team in the MLS every single year. I mean, if you guys watched the match this past Saturday, Hany Mukhtar had a great quote after the game saying that, you know, even we were 10 men down, we still had to continue to attack. Because if you want to be a good team in the MLS, you have to continue to attack. And I think if you saw this team under Gary Smith last season, if they're in the same situation, it would have ended in maybe a 0-0 draw or possibly a 1-0 loss. So for Nashville to go out there and say, you know what, we're going to go out there, 10 men down, it doesn't matter. We're going to possess the ball, cycle it around, wear them down, and get a goal.
Well, that was going to be my question on coaching. First of all, I didn't realize until earlier in the show, B.J. Callahan, actually, he is Brian Callahan. So we have two of the three pro teams in Nashville are coached by Brian Callahan.
That's true.
Which is very interesting. But, you know, personally, I'm a big fan of Gary Smith, personally. But it seems to be – is that basically the way to describe the difference, that Callahan just has a more aggressive style, more aggressive system that suits the personnel better?
Yes, it does. And I'm not saying, you know, Gary Smith didn't do a great job with Nashville. I think he helped bring this team to another level. When Gary Smith was coaching, he used a three-at-the-back formation where if you have three center backs – you're leaving your flanks open for the most part defensively. You're allowing, I guess, more opportunities for the opposing team to attack. And that takes more stamina out of your guys that are running up and down the flanks of the pitch, which is not really what you want with the style that this roster is, I guess, constructed. Now, when B.J. Callahan came in this past offseason, I think it was great. One, because he had a full offseason to really build a good rapport with the younger players. They brought in Eddie Tagseth. Patrick Yazbek was midway through last season. Those two guys are the core pillar midfielders for Nashville. And it's honestly been a blessing in disguise for Nashville when it comes to looking at Eddie Tagseth, because initially in B.J. Callahan's formation, it's technically a 4-2-3-1. We have three attacking midfielders. They put Eddie Tagseth out on the right attacking midfielder role. And when, you know, Nashville was kind of shorthanded at midfield, they needed somebody to fill in that position. They put Eddie Tagseth in there, and he's been some people call him the Norwegian nuisance, because every single ball that's in the area, he's going after. I think he leads the league, or leads Nashville for sure, with the most miles covered in a match. So this guy seems to never have any stop to his game, which is great. Just really hoping for the longevity purpose of health for this team, because that's really what's going to get them, if it does. They've already shown they can overcome that for a little bit. But the month of July is pretty vital for them if they want to stay in the top six.
So Sam Surge is currently the favorite to win the Golden Boot for most goals in the league. He's got him at number one, Messi at number two. So number one, got to feel good for him to look at that right now. What do you make? Is it as simple as the coaching change for him? Is it a combination of the coaching change and him being more comfortable in his surrounding? What do you think has led to the offensive explosion from him this year?
I think it's the addition of Andy Nahar at right back, the Honduran right back that they've brought in. You know, a lot of people, I guess, discredit defensive help when it comes to using him in offensive attack. But going to Sam Surge with all that, there have been 7 assists from Andy Nahar, and I believe 3 or 4 of them have led to Sam Surge scoring a goal. So having that addition out of the back with Andy Nahar has been great. As for Sam Surge, when it comes to possessing the ball, turning his back to a defender. I think it's coming down to the chemistry between him and Hani with this attacking style that I've already, you know, spoke about in this segment, is that you have BJ Callahan's system that's starting to wear off on Sam Surridge, and it's opening up space where if, say, for instance, Joe and I are like bumper to bumper, shoulder to shoulder, in the attacking third, Sam Surridge is really good at creating separation off the ball. So say if Andy Nahar puts a diagonal ping up in the air and it's about a 30-yard ball, Sam Surridge is bumper to bumper with Joe, and as soon as that ball is left, he creates that separation, and then his first touch is what's vital at that point. And he's done a really good job from this offseason up to now, getting his first touch in depth, ready to go, and having the ability to have, let's say, Hani Mukhtar and or Johnny Perez, who's been one of those players that has been, I guess, a role player in years past. Now, this season with Gold Cup and all the international stuff going on, Jacob Schaffelberg has been with Team Canada. So Johnny Perez has been inputted into that attacking right midfielder role, and he's been great servicing Sam Surridge as well. And I just think that chemistry is starting to build not only for the top squad, but squad B, squad C, squad D. Anybody you put out on the field for Nashville, they can somehow get the job done, which is incredible.
You're talking about this with great enthusiasm, which makes sense because Big Joe's not going to let you talk about it. Big Joe's going to make you rank the top 10 Magnum PI shows
or rank
this week. I hope you've been doing your homework on that.
I'm
glad we're giving you this outlet. This is fantastic information. So real quick on Mukhtar then.
Sure.
Is Mukhtar, I guess, a little bit more of a facilitator? Is it also a more comfortable role for him? Because obviously he had been carrying this team offensively a year ago.
I'd say this year has been a turning point in Hani's career. Obviously, still being in his 20s, late 20s, Sam Surridge came in last season as a force to be reckoned with. Now, this was Hani's team. Now, in my opinion, I think it's still Hani's team, but not to the same degree as it was a few years back. There was a big discrepancy early on in the season when Hani Mukhtar was missing penalty kicks. Yes, he did make the penalty kick this past weekend, but early on in the season, there was a discrepancy of where he kept missing penalty kicks. It was either Sam Surridge or Hani Mukhtar that was going to take it. And as of late, after, I'd say, match day three, match day four, maybe a little later on than that, Sam Surridge has been the go-to guy taking the penalty kicks. And so from there on out, it's kind of taken, in my opinion, a lot more pressure off of Hani Mukhtar's shoulders to allow him to really focus on his own game of his first touch, the way he sees the spacing in between the attacking third. BJ Callahan just expresses to all the players finding those little small pockets in between the back line and the midfield. And when you can do that with a guy like Hani Mukhtar, who's so explosive once he gets the ball to his feet and finding those outlet passes left and right of the flanks. Because, I mean, to me, the key point every single game for Nashville is if their two midfielders can hold down the midfield and basically get possession, pass it up to Hani, and Hani can facilitate it to the left and right flanks, then honestly, in my opinion, Nashville have won the game already, possessively.
Well, it's nice to be talking about a team around here that's doing some winning.
Yeah.
It's been a while since we talked about that.
Winning Brian Callahan.
Yeah, wow. There's a lot of winning going on from Nashville SC. It's good stuff.
Thank you, Fraser.
Thank you for being with us. Thank you for your information. We'll be listening at 9 o'clock.
Thank you very much
for coming in early. We appreciate it.
Don't take it easy on Big Joe.
Oh,
I won't. Don't take it easy on him.
You know what? I'm glad you guys had me on, because if you want to know more about, you know, Nashville SC, Talking Calcio podcast on Nashville Sports Network.
Absolutely. Nice. Check it out. Nick Fraser, our guest, will take your thoughts on what Fraser had to say. Wrap up the show as well coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. This fall live at Pinnacle at Nashville Yards, Tim McGraw will perform at Trinitix's Rock the Cradle. This event sure to be a great time, celebrating a great cause. Proceeds from the event will support newborns and moms at Ascension St. Thomas Midtown. You can get your tickets at Rock the Cradle Nashville. org. Also, this Wednesday, come on out to Brewhouse South in Cool Springs and meet Nashville native and two-time IndyCar champion Joseph Newgarden from 5:30 to 7. Also, Big Joe will be on site for a special broadcast of Chase and Checkers from 6 to 7 o'clock. Get on out to Brewhouse South this Wednesday, meet Joseph Newgarden, and get signed up to win tickets to the Borchetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix as well. Appreciate Nick Fraser for being with us in the last segment. Nashville SC doing a lot of winning right now. They're number two in the conference, 1 point behind Cincinnati. And as I said, nice to be talking about a winning team around here. Haven't had a whole lot of that recently, so keep it up, Nashville SC.
I'm confident that Brian Callahan will be coaching a Nashville football team in 2026.
Nice. Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. Very well done. Me too.
I guarantee it.
I share that confidence.
That was great info from
the
great
odds are
Nick
in the
Frazier.
Favor.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully the two Brian Callahan. I mean, how has this never come up? Are we breaking this news today? Like, has anybody ever talked about this?
Oh, I'm sure it was discussed.
You're a genius for figuring this out today.
I'm sure it was discussed when he was first
hired. Are you sure, though? Are you sure? Sure. Maybe not. Maybe this is breaking news on this show that we broke. I mean, there's two freaking Brian Callahans coaching pro teams in one city.
One's got a G in there, so it's a little different.
But you don't say it differently,
you don't say
right?
It. Right, yeah. So, a lot of Brian Callahans walking around here.
Pretty amazing.
Is there a Brian Callahan in the Predators organization? I don't know of one.
That's good. That's a good point.
Maybe they can go find one.
Is there any way that we can...
There used to be a Ryan Callahan that played in the NHL.
Yeah, there you go.
Bring him in. Close enough.
Maybe someday the Milwaukee Admirals can be coached by a Brian Callahan, the favorite team of this station, the Milwaukee Admirals. Great stuff from Nick Frazier. Really interesting stuff. And Sam Surridge, pretty awesome.
Golden boot.
I mean, Hani Mukhtar, like you said, I mean, you know, carried this team for a while, and you got those two guys together doing some pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah. Avanzees on YouTube says, yeah, it was talked about when he was hired. Joe's just a boomer.
You know, Avanzees, is that how you say that? Avanzees?
I don't know. That's how I'm reading it.
Or Avanzees. Yeah, I'm about sick of your crap today. So that'll be enough. Ripping the Beatles. Better. Man. And by the way, people on the text line are like, oh, yeah, younger than 75. Well, my 21-year-old son listens to the Beatles probably more than any other band. So that's good parenting, and that's good taste in music. Thank you.
There you go. Let's see.
My 17-year-old would probably rather, you know, listen to Nails on a Chalkboard than the Beatles. So it's you know, we all have our things.
We do. We do. Alex says, last year both NSC and the Titans had a Brian Callahan and a Tyler Boyd. I do remember that.
Oh, wow.
What are the odds?
Okay, so we didn't break news. That is crazy. I guess I was just
Tyler
oblivious
Boyd,
the whole conversation.
Come on now.
Yeah. The Tyler Boyd with the Titans.
Has he landed a job yet?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Talk about picking somebody up.
Nope.
Just
they keep talking about
totally
he should
cash.
Sign with Pittsburgh.
Like
that's all the speculation.
Is that right?
Steelers, yeah.
But it's like, I mean, I from what I could tell, when you think about that receiving core and the opportunity that should have been there, just someone who's totally washed.
Yeah.
You know? Which is kind of crazy. And also crazy that Brian Callahan, the American football version, had just been with him. So he, you know, I think it must have been a little bit of a falling off a cliff that no one saw coming.
I mean, he did
That's
go
why
from,
he's not
He even signed late with the Titans, though, too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He went from 67 catches in 2023 in Cincinnati for 667 yards and a couple of touchdowns, which, again, by the way, was a drop from what he was doing
but
before
that's
that.
Fine.
But that's fine. He had 39 for 390 last year. No touchdowns.
And honestly,
he averaged 3 a catch. Is that right?
No,
that's not right.
No.
He averaged 10 a catch.
Yeah.
What's the average of 3 that I'm looking at on the stat? I need to figure that out.
I don't know.
The 3 catches per game?
I was
going
to say, that would be a hell of an average.
three yards a catch. I'm catching each pass 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
I immediately fell on that bubble screen every time.
3 yards a catch.
But honestly, those numbers that you just said for Tyler Boyd, that sounds higher than I remember last year.
He averaged 3 yards for rushing last year.
Oh, okay. There
one
we go.
Carry for 3 yards.
Nice.
There you go. 3 okay. yards. I was wondering where that 3 came from. I was like, 3 yards?
He runs a 6.440 right now. But you can post him up right off the line and lateral it to him.
Oh, boy.
Good stuff.
I will be interested to see if he ends up anywhere at any point.
Yeah, I'll be surprised. Just because, you know, it just didn't. Again, you're talking about a place with plenty of opportunity a year ago.
One texter says, who had more catches, the MLS or NFL, Tyler Boyd? Which guy caught the ball more last year?
I mean, if you're doing a throw-in, you sometimes, like, you'll catch it.
That's true.
You know, like the ref will give you the you catch
just
that.
Just catch it from the official.
I don't know if he did a lot of throw-ins.
Does that count?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Good question.
You know, I mentioned earlier in the show, they need like another – like what are the most famous one stop it didn't work out, second stop it did in Titans history. I mean, it's hard to get better than Tannehill, right? Like Tannehill in Miami obviously did not work out to the degree in which they hoped. And then he came here and for a few years was really, really good. I mentioned Vandenbosch earlier, doing absolutely nothing in Arizona. And then the first year he shows up here, he gets 12 and a half sacks for the Titans.
That's crazy.
Delanie Walker. Like, those are some pretty famous examples, but they need another one of those from somebody. I have no idea who that would be this year. Like, I don't know, Draymond Jones. Would he be the candidate for that this year? But they need somebody to come out of nowhere and really help them that we're just not expecting today.
Yeah, but more exciting. Yeah, maybe Draymond Jones could have a good year. I'll be surprised if there's any veteran who, you know, is that kind of a spot. What, you know, what they really, really need draft picks and young guys to, you know, start justifying the draft picks that were used on them. It's been a while since there's been many guys, young guys on the Titans roster that were like, oh, yeah, that made sense that they picked fill-in-the-blank at fill-in-the-blank spot.
Van Jefferson, come on down, baby.
There is Van
Jefferson. There's the breakout. That's what we're looking for.
I mean, if Bryce Oliver is making this team, is Van Jefferson making this team?
I mean, I don't think it should be a guarantee that Van Jefferson is making the team. I would probably lean yes, just based on the fact that he has played in this league for a while.
So you're out on Restrepo then.
I mean,
by my math, I don't think both of them are on this team.
I don't think both of them are on the team either.
Yeah. Don't, you know, you're going to get, it's too late in the show to get the people this mad. But
yeah, you could get Restrepo to the practice squad, right?
I mean, if you can get him there, you know, there, it might be.
If he went undrafted, perhaps he wouldn't go taken.
Yeah, we'll see. Something. Yeah, I mean, I could see, I think if he performs really well, that's where you're like, could you be exposed when you put him on waivers? Yeah. You know, to a team that's really light at receiver. Can't imagine too many teams lighter than this team, but there are some light receiver rooms out there.
Van Jefferson in his career, 137 catches, 1,876 yards. He's doing it in one season this year. That's what they need.
Wait, say that again?
He had 100, and he's, in his career, he's got 137 catches for 1,876 yards.
Okay. I guess I thought he had done a little bit more than that.
Nope.
Okay.
Not getting a whole lot of Van Jefferson.
A lot of disappointment today. Mostly about people who don't realize the Beatles are the greatest band of all time.
That does it for us today. The Chase and Big Joe Show with Big Joe and Nick Frazier coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.